Hello, and thanks for listening to the Kept Faith podcast. I'm Nick McCann. I'm joined by Travis Russell.
Hey, go Padres. Here we are, the second half, Nick.
Second half. You know, I want to start the podcast off telling everybody, you know, when you hear this, it'll probably be my birthday. And I feel like I'll be 41, and I feel like I'm starting the second half of my life, you know, just like the Padres.
Much like this season. Yes. Here we go.
But we're in the second half, and we're having a really strange road trip. We're gonna dig into that and all-star reactions, maybe some trade deadline stuff with our very special guest, first time on the pod, Darnay Tripp from NBC7. What's going on?
Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it. Early happy birthday. What day is your birthday?
It's tomorrow. So yeah, Thursday, July 22nd. I'll be 41. So
happy 4-1. That's pretty awesome. How is the optimism for your second half matching up to the optimism of the Padres second half?
Well, you know, I thought I'd be one of the great teams in the league, and now I'm in third place. So that's how I feel physically, emotionally, spiritually, I think too. It's going to be fun. I'm going to enjoy my birthday weekend hopefully watching the Padres sweep the Marlins and what will be actual baseball games that will be played, full baseball games. That's what we're hoping for.
Is there like a place that you're trying to go? Is there a beer you're trying to have? Like what does the 41st celebration look like other than watching the Padres?
Well, I don't know how, I guess I'll announce it on the pod. I'm going to be watching the Marlins on Saturday at Padres or at Pretzels and Pints in North Park.
Philly bar.
I know you're a Philly native, right? So
yeah.
Have you been there yet?
Been there a couple times, enjoyed it, had a pretzel. Once I found out that there was like a place that served soft pretzels, I was like, I need to get out there. And I'm always like wanting to meet people and like shake their hands and get to know them when I find out that they're from Philly, and haven't had a chance to do that. And it's funny, some people always bring that up, and somebody mentioned it a couple weeks ago, and I've been thinking, I actually wanted to go watch a Sixers playoff game there. And the days never really lined up, and then their playoff performance never really lined up with those plans either. So, but no, it's a place I need to get back to.
Yeah, no, they're really good. They do they get up for these sporting events, and they also have, this is not an ad, but I will be there on Saturday if you guys want to come and hang out and listen to my trade deadline ideas. You have to listen. That's the gift, I think, for me. But they have $6 394s during Padre games. So they make it fun. You know, they have like whenever they play the Phillies, it's like the Padres Phillies. They put like tape down the middle of the bar and people stand on each side. It's pretty cool. So
nice. And they got a series coming up in August, so that'd be a good way. There's my opportunity to get out there. That'd be fun.
Yeah. Finally do it.
Cool. Yeah. So, you know, we just had a really fun All-Star week. It seemed to be a kind of a coming out party for Fernando Tatis Jr. on the national stage. He seemed to be a big story during the All-Star game. What did you think about that, Darnay? Just, you know, you're covering a player who is stepping into the, I guess, the international stage. He's becoming so massive as a star. I mean, what's it like covering somebody like that?
Yeah, it's pretty wild. Cause those types of opportunities don't come around very often. And I'm sure as a fan base, you know, it must be exhilarating to have like the face of baseball. It's like him or Otani, right? And like you could have a reasonable argument for either one and probably be correct to have that guy on your team. I think what stood out to me, and like not even from the All-Star break, and like you saw it continuing in Atlanta, is just like how beloved he is kind of by everybody. And, like in Philly, like typically the best, most popular player is going to hear it from Philly fans. And I'm sure Machado heard it. Yeah. But to see like the pictures and the video of all the Philly fans that like swarmed him there on like the left field line, and the Fanatic tried to break it up, and the fans that were there like weren't having it. And then now like this week in Atlanta, their mascots got like a Tatis like costume on basically, and kids with signs, and he's signing autographs during the rain delay. It just seems really rare from that standpoint to have somebody who, on top of being super good, is just embraced everywhere he goes. And I'm sure it'll change, you know, in the postseason, especially a postseason where you're going to have fans back in the stands and there's that element back. But I think that that's kind of what blows me away is like everybody loves the guy. And, you know, even in spite of him playing the game in a way that not everybody accepts, you seldom see that, you know, rear its ugly head. You know, everywhere you go, people just seem to open their eyes, open their arms to the guy and get really excited to watch him play. And that's really neat. That's really neat when like he's your guy and he's the guy that you get to cover.
Yeah. I know social media is relatively new in the timeline of baseball, but can you ever remember another player's child being like one of the main storylines for like fandom? It has honestly been something, and it even carried on into this series where like him and Tatis are waving from the fans. Freddie's Freeman's kid. It's one of the more interesting things I've ever seen in all of sports. It's so cool to watch.
Yeah, that's incredible. It's funny that like a kid whose dad is literally the reigning MVP is like, you need to make the All-Star game because I want to meet somebody else.
Amazing.
His dad isn't just like some journeyman or something like that. Like he's an actual stud Major League Baseball player, super accomplished in his own right.
Probable Hall of Famer.
And all Charlie wants to do is meet somebody else, which is incredible. The first thing that came to mind was, remember when Steph Curry, his daughter, the spotlight with like every press conference?
Yeah, that's she was
the
there.
The first one that comes to mind. That totally. Was fun. And to see that continue, a buddy of mine was like, they could potentially be teammates one day. Apparently, as a youngster, he's got a pretty impressive swing. And maybe during Tatis's second 14-year contract, they'll be able to team up.
Oh my gosh, can you imagine?
But it's so fun. That's been really fun to see play out. And Tatis is just so giving of himself from that standpoint. Like, not too big for any of that. He just wants to give.
That's what stands out with him is that he's, you know, there's certain, I'm sure you've covered different personality types with this level of talent where certain personality types don't really respond to this position very well, but he seems to embrace it in a way that is so healthy and he's not turned off by it or overwhelmed by it. He understands what he means to the sport and he's taking it. He's just taking it and running with it. It seems like, and that All-Star week really, I think, showed everybody how valuable this guy is to the sport. And he seems to really relish that responsibility. Yeah.
Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, it was funny watching his rookie season because very quickly you're like, okay, this guy's a huge deal and has enormous potential in San Diego. And then last year, you know, the Jeff Passan piece, and you just saw that kind of broader push from baseball to get him in the forefront. But even then going into this season, like you knew he was a big deal and he was a star. It just, the ascent just steadily continues. You see it in his level of play, and then you see it in like just his marketability, his exposure, the enthusiasm that's around him, the connection with fans. You just, when you think it couldn't get any bigger, he couldn't get any more popular, there's just more and more layers to it. And it makes sense when, you know, he's getting his first opportunity with the All-Star festivities. It seemed like the camera was cutting to him all the time. And, you know, he's having a good time with the players and, you know, Charlie Freeman thing and all that. I've talked about this with other people. I know we've mentioned it on our own podcast. He's just like the perfect superstar. There's lots of superstars out there, but maybe they have no personality, you know, or maybe they have like, there's the potential for questionable decision-making, this or that. Or maybe there's like the selfish aspect or the greed, or they're good. But in such a, you know, in various sports, this guy's really, really good. Russell Westbrook, really, really good.
Yeah.
Is he necessarily a superstar to be? I don't know. Like every step of the way from a relatively team-friendly, you know, $300+ million 14-year contract to his connection with fans, not just in San Diego, but everywhere. The team, just a team-first element. The way he carries himself from that standpoint, and obviously just his continued growth and work and everything you hear about him from that standpoint, like, dude just checks all the boxes.
Yeah, and he makes a 44-year-old middle-aged man jealous of a pink suit. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I never in my life wanted to be able to wear a pink suit so bad. He made that look so good.
I've been in the market for new dress shirts, and I was at a Nordstrom Rack and saw these collarless shirts. And I was like, I wonder, I don't know about that. Like, and also with, like, with TV, they're, you know, you somewhat particular about like what they want us to wear. And, right. You know, I don't want to wear something that people are going to be like either laughing at me for, or just being like, yeah, don't ever do that again. But like seeing him, I was like, you know what? Maybe I should go pick up one of those shirts. He like deludes you into thinking you can pull these things off because he does it so effortlessly and he looks so freaking cool.
So true.
Well, guys, that's what I'm going to be wearing on Saturday for my birthday at Pretzels and Pints. But yeah, no, I mean, just the red, you know, shout out to the MLB and just having the red carpet during the All-Star game. I think that's more interesting than the game in a lot of ways. Just watching their personalities play out like that. I just thought that was great. And I guess they've done it a few times now.
But and that's like, you should do that with somebody like Tatis and like the NBA's built like a market just on, I mean, you just, yeah. Every game you see pictures of the guys coming in. You've seen it. I've now seen it in college programs, and I'm sure you've seen it in the NFL. Like, that is an industry in and of itself, and it's more exposure to the players and to the league and getting people interested that might not normally be interested. And like you said, like you learn about these guys a little bit more. And so they should, I mean, baseball typically is slow to figure that sort of thing out, and that's something that they should be doing, especially with this young, exciting crop of players that are so prominent in the league right now.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest fear, and I know you worked in the Seattle market, but like how MLB just kind of wasted Felix Hernandez, you know, or just that was just an absolute star who they couldn't market, or even how you can make the argument for Mike Trout, like, why is he not a bigger star than he is? I mean, he might be the greatest baseball player we've ever seen, and he's not a household name for a lot of people. And it seems like it's changing with Tatis, and hopefully that continues. But the thing with Tatis is he's having this moment now, and all of it could kind of become hollow if he doesn't make a real run in the postseason. And this Padres team, you know, they are going into the second half, and they are sitting basically with a second wild card spot in the NL. And where are you guys at with this? Because our pitching staff is shredded. The offense is sputtering a little bit. This road trip has been just a bizarre nightmare and all that. But what do you think the second half? How do you think the second half is going to play out? And do you feel comfortable going into a one game playoff against either the Dodgers or the Giants?
Yeah, I mean, that is the unfortunate reality. And no, I mean, I don't think any of those three teams would feel great about that outcome. But that's just kind of the situation that that everybody's in, and that the Padres are certainly staring right at, given where they are as it stands. I don't know. It's hard to say. You know, at this point, I think we all kind of have to come to grips. The Giants are real, and they're not going anywhere. They seem like they're just going to be there. Whether they do slide, I mean, Fangraphs about a month or so ago had, I think, the Padres at like 92% and the Giants at 83% of making the postseason. Those numbers have not flipped, but kind of leveled out. Mm-hmm. And you know, the edge, all that to say, like the edge that they gave the Padres seems to have kind of dissipated as the end of the first half came about. But they're going to be there one way or another. I think the exciting thing is, like, from August 24th on, that, like, that's probably when this thing is going to get settled.
Yeah.
Like, it's hard to imagine a situation where anybody runs away with it from that point forward, or the positioning of the wild card teams is set at that point. And you've got, I want to say, 10 games between the Giants and the Padres from like September 12th on, and then 9 between the Padres and Dodgers from like August 23rd on.
Yeah.
So that's when we'll find out. And you got the Braves mixed in. You've got some other teams mixed in that.
There's like six teams that are all in the upper 40s and wins. They could, right. If they shift up, if they start catching us, that's when it's a real disaster. But I think you're right. I think it does come down to that last part of the season. I mean,
yeah. And they where are they at with the Reds right now? I know they padded their win till they're at like 3.5 at the break and then got it to like, but I know like they helped their cause a little bit from that standpoint. But yeah, more so than last year, like, man, the wild card series would be sweet this year.
I mean,
you know, because with a stacked division where that in all likelihood, yeah, it's six games over the Reds right now, that in all likelihood is going to, you know, send three teams to the postseason. Now more so than last year, that would be ideal.
Yeah, I guess the scenario I dread is that we make it to the one game playoff and they, you know, it's not, we lose the game and then, you know, the Giants and Dodgers fans are just saying, well, glad we could have this series and have it be a real rivalry or something like that, you know, but, or, I mean, you know, they just have they flounder during this part of the schedule where they should be beating up on lesser teams and they're not able to time the pitcher that they want for that one game. You know, I mean, these are the things I'm thinking about. I don't know about you, Travis, but like, you know, I don't want to end up in a one game playoff with a DeGrom or something like that and just have your season. I guess DeGrom wouldn't be in that because they would probably win the division, but
I honestly don't mind the one game playoff, but looking at September and our schedule, like that September is what matters.
Yeah.
I think there's seven games between us and San Francisco and six between us and the Dodgers. And to me, it just seems like a brawl at the end. We play Arizona once after, well, we don't play them at all in September. It's just bizarre how much it is San Francisco and the Dodgers at the end of the season.
Yeah.
I don't know. To me, that's really what matters. I can't even think about that game right now, that one magical game. I'm not there yet. We can really determine our fate regardless of what happens before September on how we play these two teams in September. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah. At the very least, they've played really well against the Dodgers. Now, that could all you know, as great against the Giants, to your point, you know, how that shakes out in September is going to obviously impact how you're feeling in your gut once that game potentially rolls around. But yeah, that's just kind of the unfortunate spot that you're in. And I mean, the good thing with this team is, and I think, you know, it has to impact their approach to some degree and then how we all kind of digest what they do at the deadline.
Right.
Like, who do you feel better about being in this position a year from now? The Padres or the Giants? 2 years from now, the Padres or the Giants?
Right. Yeah.
Like the Dodgers are going to be around, but like the, you know, all the elder statesmen for the Giants, I don't know what their contracts look like and this and that, but you expect all these guys to, you know, Brandon Belt and Brandon Crawford and these guys to play at the level that they have this year going forward? No, not necessarily. Right. And so if things take a sour turn and don't turn out great the first week in October, you can at least rest on that. And then how much do you want to, or do you feel compelled to ship off how much, you know, the way that Preller played the deadline last year and as aggressive as he was during the offseason, is there that same urgency when you've got Clevinger, you've got this youth, and you feel like we're building this thing for a few years. It's not a one and a half season window going back to like last deadline.
Yeah. I mean, I feel after what we've been through in the last decade here, you know, the fact that we're hitting a trade deadline where there's stories being written about whether or not the Padres will go over the luxury tax. You know, I didn't see that happening in my lifetime, Travis. I'm only halfway through, but
like looking up for you.
No, but I mean, that's what's being talked about on, you know, rumor websites and you know, people are saying things like, if, you know, they could go after Gallo and maybe somebody else, and Peter Seidler doesn't care about the tax, you know, at all. I mean, that's baffling to me. But I mean, what are you guys thinking about going into this trade deadline? This trade deadline is one of my favorite times of the year. I just think it's so insane and it's so fun to follow. But
I have a real quick question, and then I'll let Travis answer that.
Yeah.
Again, this is my third year covering the team, so I haven't been around for very long. Feel like I was seeing Joey Gallo trade proposals on like April 3rd. Is it normally this? And I don't remember it last year. I don't remember nearly as much trade debt. And maybe it's because of what Preller did the last two, like the offseason and the trade deadline, where people are just gassed up because they think they're going to see the same thing. But it's been constant since like mid-April, it feels like.
Well, Gallo's a weird one because he has that history with the Rangers, and you know, it's, I think that's what does it. But I don't know. I don't know if I really want Joey Gallo in that way. Like I really would want somebody like a Zach Davies or somebody who can just eat innings I just need pitching, because this pitching staff is just getting shredded, and they can't go deep into games. We need somebody who's just a middling, maybe two middling starters. That's all I'm hoping for, but maybe Preller has more up his sleeve. I mean, do you guys think Gallo would, I guess if they improve over Will Myers with Joey Gallo, is that,
as hard as the time I've given Myers over the years, I don't feel like Gallo is an improvement to Myers that much. To me, our pitching is where we still need to fill in the gaps. To me, Gallo is like a replacement for Profar, which like that outfield replacement guy that we can have, you know, pinch hit in the late innings when we need that power bat.
Would they also put him at first too, and take a bats away from Hosmer? I think that's because he can play corner outfield, corner infield. He's a versatile player, and he's having a decent summer so far, hit at the plate. So I noticed that you guys
make sense to me, but
on the On Fryer podcast, you guys tweeted out a phone number for people to call in and give some thoughts on like which players people would want to trade for. And I think you had Gallo.
Yeah, we did this. I don't think I've gotten any messages yet. We did this after Musgrove's no hitter night and got some messages from people, and it was really fun hearing people's reaction. And so I was like, let's, you know, these, whenever you try and draw engagement, it can be kind of hit or miss.
Yes.
But it's fun to do, especially when it works out. So if you have like some trade proposals you want to get off your chest, 858-609-0162, leave a message.
Check it out. On Fryer Podcast, wherever you find podcasts.
Yeah, exactly. I appreciate the plug. The tricky thing with this is like, I was just looking at Will Myers' numbers from July. He's hitting .311 with a OPS north of one. Hosmer's obviously turned it on. Profar's put up good numbers. And so how much does that skew like how you feel going into this and how aggressive you want to be? I do agree. And I was thinking about this today, like from a position player standpoint, where do these guys fit? Especially when Austin Nola's coming back this weekend.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Ha-Sung Kim was awesome in a doubleheader today. Yeah. You know, defensively, he's going to do his thing, but you know, at the plate, it's, you know, you've really seen a lot of growth. Profar is getting back to, you know, where he was a year ago. I feel like I'm missing somebody, but it just, I understand everybody's sick of Jorge Mateo, and you know, Brian O'Grady hasn't delivered as well as people would have hoped and all that. But if you get a Joey Gallo, yeah, where do you put him? Where do those, how often is he in the lineup? Where is he in the lineup? One thing I didn't realize, he hasn't played in the infield since like 2018. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's played third since like 2017, something like that. Yeah, I mean, I get the appeal of him and his power and the fact that he's an OBP guy, you know, that kind of meshes with the team's philosophy. And because Preller drafted him, Preller loves Preller guys, you know. I mean, but I do agree, and I think it'd be hard not to agree. I'd be interested in anybody who says otherwise. Like number one and probably number two need is in the rotation. I just feel like the bench is gonna just improve with the return of Austin Nola, and you've got these versatile guys that you can throw out there. I don't know how much it's about the individuals as it is just kind of the guys, the lineup top to bottom, sticking to their approach and being disciplined. You know, that seems to be the make a huge difference from one game or series to the next. They just put up 41 runs over the course of three games. Like they obviously can hit. It's just that it comes and goes for whatever reason. And Tingler's given a number of reasons for it, whether it's not hitting the fastball or, you know, not controlling the zone or this or that, but they've got it in them. What they don't necessarily have in them are five reliable starting pitchers. And exactly. So that would be 1A. And do you necessarily need to get an ace? I don't think so. I think you can get somebody kind of on the cheap that you can throw in the back of the rotation and take some of the wear and tear off the bullpen.
Yeah. You need an innings eater. That's what you need. I think just someone that can, you know, keep it down over a long period, because if you look at the Padres lineup, whether Hosmer's at first or Cronenworth's at first and, you know, Kim's at second, Myers in the outfield, Grisham, Pham, Machado, Tatis, if those guys are all doing what they should be doing, that's an unbeatable lineup. I don't think Gallo really makes that much better. You know what I mean? And Gallo could go into a slump or whatever. So if you have guys that when they're all clicking, and if they all click at the right time, can put up 24 runs in a game or 23, whatever it was, yeah, like that's not where you need to go meddling around. It's just a matter of them getting consistent together. But pitching is where we're really like, especially, we're struggling. Yeah. And who pitched today in the first game, or was it?
Paddock and Kinnear.
Yeah. I mean, he did pretty good. At least he looked good at times. So again, there's that where these guys come up from our minor league system, and they're at least serviceable over a few innings. It's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and on top of, you know, just the fit is the price with Gallo, especially since he seems to be a pretty sought after commodity. And so how much do you want to give up? And so, yeah, all that plays into it, and it's just impossible to gauge with AJ Preller. He's as creative and as aggressive as they come. And so, you know, maybe he blows us away with, I mean, who would have thought that you'd get Yu Darvish at the price that you got Yu Darvish for. And so you just don't know.
But he's also not operating with the same hand that he has for the last 2 years. I mean, the farm system is not what it used to be, which is fine because he's actually used those assets to get more major league ready talent. But, you know, he's not operating from this place where he can unload all these guys that are middle, not, you know, their top stuff, but they still guys that are, you know, other teams are interested in. I mean, this could be a trade deadline where he doesn't do a whole lot, and he's done that before. I think he's had two aggressive moments, you know, the off season and last deadline, but this could be close to what we're going into the postseason, or, you know, the end of the season with. And I don't know. I mean, he has shown that he is not going to just make a trade just to make a trade. And I think that's ultimately a smart way to operate. But yeah, it's fascinating. I mean, who are some of the pitchers that you guys are looking at? I mean, I've heard Davies batted around a little bit, and then obviously Max Scherzer. I don't know how real that is, but that's a guy that would probably bump them closer to the tax, right?
Yeah. And it sounds like, you know, that's all right. You know, they're not too worried about it from that standpoint. Yeah. The cost is, I mean, it's always the interesting aspect of it, but, you know, to your point, they had a lot more to work with in the past. It still sounds like, just in reading and kind of looking around and looking at different proposals and, you know, what analysts think would land them certain pieces, there are, you know, the Joshua Mears of the world, Reggie Lawson, Tucapito Marcano, maybe Luis Campusano, if you really want to swing big for somebody. Obviously, keep a hold of CJ and Hassel and Gore. But, you know, still got some guys to work with. A name that, you know, I've kind of settled on is Tyler Anderson of the Pirates. A guy that I think he just threw 7 innings his last time out, I think yesterday. Oh, had a quality start.
That's
exciting. Pitched 5 or more. He's pitched 5 or more every start.
Yeah.
He hasn't been pulled before 5 innings yet this season. And,
I'm drooling. Hold on.
That's all I want.
Like, his numbers are fairly underwhelming. Like, he's got a,
I know,
ERA in the mid fours. But, you know, every fifth day he goes out there and throws 5, 6, or 7 innings, you know, that's what this team needs. And You know, what does that do for you come October? I don't know. The rotation tightens up a little bit, and so you might not necessarily need them. Hopefully, you know, knock on wood, they don't have the same thing happen to them in September that they did last year, where suddenly every arm that you have is kind of thrown into a more prominent role. Davies would be a funny one. I mean, like, if you're the Cubs, how much do you avoid making that trade just on principle?
Hey, yeah.
Like, you flipped Eric Lauer for Davies and then Yu Darvish, and then Davies was one of the prominent pieces to get Yu Darvish, and now we're going to give him back to you.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even care if this fits. Like, I don't even care what I'm getting back. Just for principle, I'm not going to do that.
While they're kind of hanging around in the wild card a little bit, they're still, I don't know. Anymore,
it seems like they're very much in sell mode.
Yeah.
Yeah. What are they? 8 back of the wild card. So, but Davies would be perfect. And, you know, I don't
like that. Yeah.
I don't necessarily know what happened to him in the postseason last year. He wasn't that guy. But in the meantime, when you're just trying to kind of hold it together, win some games, move up in the standings, challenge for the division, and take some weight off your bullpen, that's a guy that would seemingly be able to do that if he continues to pitch the way he did last year.
Yeah, I agree. And I think him and Snell could, like, geek out together. They seem like very similar personalities. And maybe they could fix each other or whatever. I don't know. I think that's a really brilliant idea. I miss Davies. He was
a
fun
guy
to watch pitch.
Is he on Twitch? Him.
Yeah, I think he was, Twitch. Wasn't he?
Was he?
I think he is, yeah.
Yeah, he was a gamer. Maybe I'm mixing it up because I don't know.
There's
a
lot of
styles, but
I know Snell's on Twitch.
Oh, yeah. Is he ever? Maybe Davies can impart on him some advice on pitching on the road. I don't know. I don't know what Davies' road numbers look like this year. I don't necessarily remember last year, other than he was pretty solid, but that's certain area where Snell could kind of straighten things out a bit.
Yeah. Well, Davies
is great because he can, like, hit every third start or so, he'll just have this masterful game where he's just picking apart everybody, you know, and then he'll fall back. But yeah, I think that just somebody can go deeper with, especially with, you know, we have a Pomerantz got hurt, which is, he hasn't played a whole lot this year, but mm-mm. You know, the bullpen is really being taxed in a way that it has to come up to bite him at the end, right? I mean, this is Shark Melanson hasn't looked as good as he did in the beginning of the season. He's had a couple of rough outings, but yeah, it seems all connected. If they can just have starters who can go deeper than they have been. I mean, the killer is the day, a game like yesterday when Yu Darvish looks really good and he goes deep into the, well, relatively deep into the game and they lose just on, you know, one pitch, you know, but it's those are the killers, I think. We're
yeah, and you know, and Paddock, you know, to his credit, goes five scoreless innings, and you know, one of his best performances of the year, gets through, I think, in 77 pitches, and Pomerantz comes in, and you know, it, you could make arguments either way in terms of keeping Paddock in the game, but it made sense from the standpoint that in the 7-inning game, that was essentially, you know, he got you through 7, then you go to your setup guy and your closer. Pomerantz didn't necessarily do his part. And so I would think again, I don't necessarily know if you need an ace or just an innings eater in the rotation, and then maybe an upgrade or a new piece in the bullpen, because those guys have had a heavy workload and the numbers are kind of starting to show it of late. And so maybe just a new arm, a fresh arm, some new life in the bullpen. Maybe it's a late inning guy, you know, maybe there is enough concern about Pomerantz, or maybe you feel like you can upgrade over Melanson where you bring in somebody to kind of challenge for that closer role or just give you a different look there. But I would kind of rank those ahead of a position player at this point, just given their offensive potential and how the bench is going to improve now with the return of Alcinola. But that's just me.
Yeah,
agreed.
Well, you know, before we get out of here, I wanted to mention just on Saturday night, there was a really, you know, scary moment in Washington about, you know, with the violence happening outside the stadium. Darnay, what was that like? I mean, just at your work at NBC, when a story like that unfolds, what's it like around there when, you know, a sports story becomes more of like a national story with a lot of different implications like that, where, you know, the gun violence debate enters into sports and, you know, a sporting event is shut down for this. What was it like for you guys during that and when a story like that unfolds?
Yeah. Well, full disclosure, I wasn't on that night. Derek Tokerson, my colleague at NBC7 and On Fire co-host, was working that night. And I caught our 11 o'clock show because I knew it would be featured, you know, more prominently than the Padres are. You know, it's usually a playoff game or opening day or something like that, where we get kind of the A block, you know, early on in the show treatment. And that was certainly one of them. You know, as far as kind of like the debate on these topics that always ensues, and rightly so, that's not something we typically go into, mm-hmm. or really ever go into, you know, especially as just kind of a, there are certain people that have the platform to speak to those issues. You know, that's not what my bosses are expecting of
me, right.
You know, and that's where you can tread into some kind of dicey territory. And so we usually kind of steer clear of that in a situation like that. You know, even this is a completely different type of situation, but, you know, last year when the game against the Mariners got called, you know, the afternoon before, after the incident in Milwaukee, and then the Brewers decided they weren't going to play. Decided they weren't going to play. It's another one of those situations where, for the most part, we're delivering what happened and let you know how it played out and what the players are thinking about it. Occasionally there's opportunities when appropriate to kind of express your feelings on the topic, but certainly in a situation like Saturday, we wouldn't necessarily, you know, tread into that territory, but it's certainly concerning. And you, like, obviously these incidents have happened too often, and the fact that people are like hiding under or behind their seats at a stadium, like, that should never, that nobody should be in that situation, be in that position. It's incredibly unfortunate and sad. And you're glad that it didn't turn out worse for all involved. But unfortunately, these are things that, you know, we have to kind of think of and consider. And I'm sure you guys, when you've been in crowds, like, or heard of other experiences, like, the possibility enters your mind, and it's scary. And so, you know, the Padres seemed to handle the situation really well with a lot of maturity. And what you saw from Tatis and Machado and Myers and Profar opening the gates and helping people into the dugout, because in the moment they perceived that as the safest place to be, was awesome.
Yeah.
Again, when you think about like what you want out of your stars, like it's, that's it. And how would you ever know that? You never want to find that out, you know, because you never want them to be in that position. And so they bizarre. Did something. Yeah. Really, really admirable. And, you know, what Jace had to say Sunday was super powerful. And, so yeah, that was a bizarre, strange, scary set of circumstances that you hope to never relive.
Yeah, because I don't really think that a major sporting event like that in America has been shut down for something like that, right? I mean,
I can't recall.
Yeah, like not in that way where there's, you know, an active shooter and people are, they have to cancel the game like that. It just is really sad. I agree. I mean, it's just sad that it, you know, that this thing that we use to escape from issues like that, just, we can't escape it basically. And that's something that we all have to face. And we're lucky that, you know, nobody inside the stadium got hurt. Right. So,
The last year has been like, nuts enough as it is, you know, and, it's been fun to enjoy crowds and feel the electricity around Petco, and, you know, going back to opening day, just to see people lined up outside the gates, and obviously being in the stadium and hearing the roars and the buzz and all that has just been incredible. And, you know, you hate to have those opportunities spoiled by anything, much less, you know, something as dangerous as that.
Yeah. I heard a bunch of stuff about how, you know, the Padres ownership has been proactive about it, and they have a lot of protection, basically with the Omni facing down into the stadium. They have people watching those windows. There's snipers watching those, I guess. And which would be a great profile for you to do if you guys ever want to do.
That's a good idea. I saw somebody tweet that out.
This guy Brandon, I'm assuming it's true that they have like protective snipers that they're watching those windows that are looking into the stadium.
Sure. It makes sense. I hadn't heard that myself, other than seeing that tweet, but
yeah, that's the world, I guess.
Flashing back to a Van Damme movie in the 90s. I think it has to do with hockey.
Yeah.
The like sudden snipers death. What is that movie called?
That's the sudden, it's called Sudden Death, and it's about the Pittsburgh Penguins.
It is. There you go.
Yeah.
Not Bloodsport.
No, we can we can go through that. We should start a Jean-Claude podcast. There's probably 17 of them. But hey, Darnay, thanks for coming on. And this was a lot of fun. That was a darker last topic there. But, you know, it's something
do you want to throw something else in there off the top of your head, just to kill a few minutes and like end on a happy note? Do you want any more birthday plans you want to get into? No, Travis is drinking wine. Like, what kind of wine? Is this like a Syrah? Or is this
just a red blend.
A red blend,
one of the cheapest ones at Costco.
Perfect.
Costco with my life. So if they have wine there, and it says red blend, I trust it.
As you should.
Yes.
Darnay, you tweeted something a couple weeks ago and I responded to it, but you asked a question like if you were sitting in a car with Fernando Tatis Jr., what would be the song that you would play? If he like sat down in your car, what would the song that you would play be? And I tweeted from the Tiquette Faith account, Steal My Sunshine by Len. But I don't know. What would yours be, Travis?
Is there a connection to San Diego that I don't know?
No, they're Canadian. They are Canadian.
I know. I'm so paranoid about offending or upsetting anybody. I Googled Len to make sure they weren't from San Diego and I didn't know about it. And once I saw they were Canadians, it's like, okay, this is fair game.
One hit wonder for sure. That one hit wonder.
I always get them confused with I Like Girls Who Wear Abercrombie and Fitch.
Right.
Great. I often think that's the same song and it's the same era.
Time, yeah.
I think the music videos might even have looked similar, and you couldn't name another song by either one of those bands. So they just kind of mold together in my mind.
I think I would actually, if I'm being honest, if I was hanging out with Fernando Tatis, which is still in play and I want that to happen. But
well, Fernando, just so you know, Saturday he'll be watching your game. Yeah. At Pretzels and Pints in North Park.
Right.
And so if you can catch a private jet, maybe if you get a scheduled day off, that's your opportunity.
I'd probably play some PM Dawn with him. I think that's what I would throw on.
I was just like going through my Spotify playlist and it doesn't get updated nearly enough. And I feel like when I have it on shuffle, I'm like, these are the same songs I was shuffling through like 8 years ago. I don't even know who you were referencing. And when I was going through the replies, and it was a fun exercise because there were a lot of them, I was like, I am so out of touch. It's stupid.
Yeah.
Music, I think I would.
All the music has been made that I need.
Exactly. That's kind of how I feel. Yeah.
My crush on Tatis is so deep and so maybe bizarre to most people. I think I'd play something creepy like You're My Best Friend by Queen. And just totally weird him out. But that's how I feel. Like, he's my best friend. Like, I love him. And
just smiling at the entire time.
Like, when the baseball gets too close to his head and he has to duck down, like, I want to fight somebody. Like, do not hurt like, I care about him like he's my own child. Maybe not my best friend, but
maybe
Butterfly Kisses, like what you play at your daughter's wedding, maybe a song like that.
I was going to say a Michael McDonald song, but now like Real Love, you know, something really like heartfelt.
I've had the time of my life, maybe. What's that?
Yeah.
Dirty
just
Dancing.
Sit in silence with them. Just sit in silence and just.
Do you guys want to just talk?
Yeah.
Can we just talk?
Maybe they like true crime podcasts or something like that.
Sounds of the Orca. Just put it on like animal. Yeah. Well, it's going to happen someday. I'm angling towards it. Hopefully we can.
You'll get your opportunity. Like you said, he's a very giving, friendly guy, and so I wouldn't put it past you to have that experience with him at some point.
I have 13 more years, 13 and a half more years.
All I know is I will not hold it together as well as Charlie Friedman did. That the way he walked up and when they met in the dugout and that high, that, you know, handshake he gave was the most like powerful, purposeful handshake maybe I've ever seen in my life. I would not hold it together that way. I'd be a little more jelly-ish if I got to meet Tatis like that.
What I loved is he did that and then like stopped and looked at his dad and then like turned around and gave him another hug. He's like, no, I'm not done with
him. I'm not done.
This will continue. I always wonder like, what would you, it's so funny because like, I feel like thought about this myself with people that I really admire is like, where do you go with the conversation?
Yeah.
And like, what do you say that hasn't already been said? Because I think that's like, that's kind of the key. And I don't have a whole lot of experience in this avenue, but like, how do you make this experience different from them that causes them to engage with you in a way that goes beyond like, hey, I love you. Thanks for being great. And you like living and playing for San Diego, you know?
What would you do if you, I mean, maybe you already have met him, but like say you ran into Allen Iverson, would you just, I don't know if personally if what I would do, I would probably be a wreck, but
I actually know the answer. I actually know the answer to this question because I've thought about it a lot, and I was going to do this. So I went to his Hall of Fame induction in 2016.
Sure,
which like I'm getting chills.
Yeah,
it was an emotional experience, and you guys will enjoy this for. I mean, you probably enjoyed it for Tony Gwynn and Trevor Hoffman, and now you'll enjoy it for Fernando Tatis Jr. But in the like right when you got in. He was sitting in the front and it was just a free for all. You could just walk wherever. And so I walked to the front hoping to like have kind of a moment. And as soon as I got there, like a whole bunch of people got, you know, got there at the same time. And then security kind of sent them their own ways. And I think I ended up just saying thanks for everything or something super basic like that. And he's like, you got it, brother. But what I would actually, if I had the opportunity, what I would actually say is I went to a game when, the year they went to the finals, I would just tell them this story. And I don't know if it's a good story, but like, this is my Allen Iverson story. The year they went to the finals, my dad and I, we always went to a couple games. And one game, my dad got tickets floor level behind the hoop. And they were like obstructed view tickets. So we got them for like, it's like $30 or $40, like a pretty good price. Mm-hmm. But we always sat on the upper levels and I was in 10th grade and I had my little point and shoot camera. And so I walked down to the baseline. I was taking pictures. I was taking pictures of him. I was taking pictures of all the players. And I go back up. My dad was like, did you get that picture of him? I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, did you get that picture of Allen? I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. He was like, he was pointing at you and posing for your camera. Like, did you see him?
Wow.
I was like, I totally missed him. And that still haunts me to this day.
Oh,
like
man.
That I could have this like Polaroid, not Polaroid, but this printed out like fuzzy picture of AI pointing at me or posing for my camera. So I would tell him this story and thank him for that and be like, can I get a picture? Now, can I have my opportunity now to get an actual picture with you?
Yeah.
That's how it would go. And then I would just blubber the rest of the time, but I would at least know like what conversation point one would be.
I never met Tony Gwynn and I part of me kind of likes that it's just, he is this God to me that I never really saw in person other than on the field. But I wonder how I would react if I actually met Tatis. I haven't done it yet. So I'll have a full report on it. We'll have an emergency podcast. If any of us actually touch his hand, I don't like,
Maybe just act like you don't know. Just like, so where are you from? How long have you lived in San Diego?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you play basketball? Or you?
Oh, you just moved here. Have you tried Alberto's, huh? That's it.
Yeah. Where's your favorite California burrito? Do you like any of the breweries around here?
Yeah.
How do you feel about Len?
How do you feel about
Len? Exactly.
Do you want to sit in my car?
Five. Let's go.
Do you want to sit in my car and listen to Len?
It's not summer until you hear it. Okay. All right. Hey, Darnay, thanks for coming on. And you can follow Darnay at Darnay Trip on Twitter and check out the On Fryer podcast. You guys have a new episode coming out soon? Is that
Yeah, we typically have them coming out every Thursdays, the occasional emergency podcast. So, I mean, after the deadline, I'm sure, I'm sure you guys. And I think there will be no shortage of Padres related podcasts for people to listen to around August 31st. But,
right.
or July 31st. So, but yeah, Thursdays is when you can typically find a new episode of On Fire.
Cool. Well, yeah, you can check the rest of our stuff out at thekeptfaith.com and KeptFaith IG and Twitter. And we'll probably check in after the deadline. We got to just see how this shakes out before we can talk about it again, I think. So is that good with you, Travis? You got it?
Sounds good.
Cool. We'll probably have a Padres canon up next week, I think. So we'll see you next time. Keep the faith.
Go Bye. Padres.